reminds me of the six wine glasses that turn into seventh glass. I think this might be better than the first room, don't you? It was spaced out a little different. So I'd say save the best to last. I've been instructed to finish 1 John, the part where we left off. And I feel that this is a message that is in every Bible in the world. And I think it's a summary of what the Bible's all about, no matter who is reading it, no matter what religion you're reading it to. It's a summary of the religion of the world and the purpose of it. It's so simple. Only John could write it. And as we finish it off, you'll see how beautifully he tells you what you want to know, what you've been searching all over to find out. And yet, here it is. He says it so simply. And when we come to certain areas, I'll explain why the complications arise, in my opinion, that it doesn't sound simple to people. They've long forgotten what is in here and what they may have agreed to at one time. I have one question, and I'm going to go into it at the second half, so you won't be waiting for it, the one who wrote it. And I said that once before, but this time I'll probably do it. This is, again, John speaking. In the third chapter. That's in the book he wrote so many years later, which explains the Christ approach to living and our ability to follow it is not difficult. In fact, I've never seen it expressed so simply as he does. Behold, the manner of love which the Father has given us, and all that. Beloved, now are we the sons of God. Now are we the sons of God. And as he goes on a little further, he'll cement that relationship. You'll see how you can be nothing but the Son of God. That's who you are. He wants to impress it upon you that you're nothing but the Son, because that's everything. And he wants to make it indelible. That you don't say, am I the Son of God? I fibbed last week. And does that bar me? See what I mean? Now are we the sons of God. Does not yet appear what we shall be. He's breaking down what a son of God can be, this and that and the other thing. It can be many things, but you're the one thing as well. In this, the children of God are manifest, and the children of the devil, whosoever doeth not righteousness is not of God, neither he that loveth not his brother. Now, to love your brother and to be righteous is the will of God. If you don't love your brother, I don't care who he is, there's no qualifications. If you don't love your brother, that's not the will of God. And therefore, you're not the Son of God. You're not acting like the Son of God. And this disqualifies maybe 9/10 or a little more of the world, not loving their brother. He says it very simply. And that's the fact. And you abide by it or you pay the price. Now here we come to the most important parts of John's statements. We know that we have passed from death unto life. We have passed from death unto life. Because we love the brethren. There's your stipulation. We love the brethren. He that loveth not his brethren abideth in death. That's a very strong statement, and it's one that has to be hung up on the walls of every community in the world. Rather than do that, we must know it. He that does not love his brethren abideth in death. It has to be that way because God is love. God is one. You're in God. And if you don't love your brethren, you're stepping out of God. I don't believe we ever have known that that does not abide in love abides in death. I don't believe we've ever realized that. I think that would stop many a bickering and many an attitude that is prevalent. You're abiding in death. You could practically divide in a big argument in the middle of a city about a certain thing. Some go this way and some go that way. There's got to be the love of your brethren or you abide in death. And that's a law. That's a cosmic law. It's not a question of what do you think of it, what don't you think of it, what's your opinion, how do you stand, none of that. It's open and shut. So I'd say we have to watch ourselves. And that's the intention of it. You can't call a man this and that and expect that you're still abiding in life. God won't let you. You have to conquer your emotions and get to the point where you are loving that man who's going to the chair. That man who is said in the paper as a headline, he just swindled a group of people. You have to love him. It's hard to do, isn't it? Sometimes it turns your stomach to have to do it. I'm not making things up. I'm just taking them as they say, verbatim, and that's God's will. I don't have a choice. God says, love this man. I don't care if the court has convicted him. Love this man. And there's a lot of people you don't like. You just don't like them. You find out at an election time that half the nation hates the guy and the other half just tolerates him. We're all abiding in death. Love your neighbor. If the love of God is not in you, you abide in death. And the reason is this. God's love doesn't depend on what we do or don't do, you see? It doesn't hang on that. God doesn't look at you and say, you're doing it right, I love you. And you're doing it wrong and I don't love you. That's not right. That's not what's happening. This law of God is completely independent of anything you do or say. The law is inflexible. It's only you who benefit or don't benefit. The law doesn't change. The law of love is an eternal law. You see that? Clearly? The law of love is eternal. And the reason God says you must love everyone you see is because he made everyone you see. And you're looking at the mental image of that one. You're not looking at that one. If you look and cannot see that one, you cannot love that one because you are mistaken in what you feel. You're reacting to his form, his action, his speech. And that's not the man. That's not the woman. She is made in the image and likeness of God, and you're loving the image and likeness of God. So this fellow who is pretty low on your list, he's a moral failure. You don't hate him, you only hate the image of him. We'll go that far. If you want to hate an image, go ahead. But you must know the reality of him is the image and likeness of God. The reality of him doesn't have AIDS. The reality of him does not lie or steal. You must love what is there in reality. Not what you see. This is the point. So at every individual in the world, you unmask them in your consciousness, you see that they are the divine image. And I love the divine image. Because they're just the same as I. We're all one infinite Christ appearing as several million, several billion divine images. The images all vary according to the local customs and the visions and the attitudes and the emotions of people, and they don't reflect what God put there. God put his divine image everywhere on the earth, and that's what we are worshiping. That's what we are loving. It's almost like a healing. You don't heal the divine image. You rest in the knowledge that there is a divine image. And that which appears as needing correction only does because the mind is placing it there. The mind of the individual, the mind of you, and the world mind, all conspiring to make something look as it is not. There is an angel there. And we're all moving with angels unaware. We haven't even accepted ourselves as that angel. We still think that we are we. I'm so-and-so, and I do so-and-so, and I live at such an address, and I'm married to this one, and we have these children. And it's about time we see that we're just talking about someone we have in our imagination. And other people have that same someone in their imagination. And we live in an imagined world with an imagined population. That's the point of this simplicity here. That's the point of knowing. He could say, but he says it a certain way because you have to love the person. But he doesn't mean you have to love the person. He doesn't say it, in fact. He says you have to love the individual or whatever he does say. And the point is that you have to see what is there in your consciousness. If the world would stop and say to itself, how can God tell us to love him when he just committed a crime? It would see that God didn't tell us to love him. God said, I have made a perfect image and likeness. He is my son. I'm asking you to love my son. I'm not asking you to love what you see. For 2,000 years, man has carried that mistake. He looks out and he sees what he sees, and I can't love him. No, nobody could. You unmask what you see to see the reality, to know and accept the reality, sight unseen. There is the Christ. And you've accused the Christ, without knowing it, of being a robber and a thief and a this and a that. We all do. That's why they hung Jesus. They couldn't see. That same mistake is repeated for 2,000 years in a million different forms. They hang the image and likeness of God, not knowing it's the image and likeness of God. So they take what isn't there and they hang it up to show us in plain sight what is the error of mankind. Mankind does not see the Christ. So we learn. We learn that the Christ covers the universe. Covers the universe, just as we accept God covering the universe. And the Christ is the way we are taught. We weigh everything we know against the Christ. If it doesn't work out right, there's something wrong in it. We all thought we had buried the Christ. We hadn't. Can you see the stupidity of the world? Right there. Totally unaware of the fact that we thought we had buried the Christ. We called him Jesus. We didn't think he was the Christ then. We thought we had buried Jesus. He was a lot of trouble to some people. They buried him. And it is demonstrating that man is hypnotized. Nobody can see me. as he said, I have made the world and the world doesn't recognize me. We have a tremendous era. As long as you live, that era will be on Earth. But it's meant to be there. That's the way you're going to learn how to accept the reality, the life that is present but unseen. Now, it doesn't matter how you look, what I'm looking at. If I don't know that the Christ, the one Christ, is present, although 70 people are sitting here, I'm just wasting your time and mine. And if you can look at the rest of us and not see invisibly the one Christ, you're wasting your time. That's the major illusion in the world. Every individual should know about it. The ones who are being educated in the infinite way certainly know about it. And we've got a long start ahead of religions, agnostics, other kinds of beliefs. We've got a long start because they're all tampering with truth. Some don't intend to. They mean well, but they're still tampering with the truth. Men actually buried Jesus Christ. They thought, now we have no trouble, he's out of the way. That's a funny one. But there were those who believed in him. There were those who quietly went about the business of looking for him. There were those who transferred from what they believed in to something else in spite of the fact that he had been murdered, they thought. Here I am. There's the Christ, the one they thought had been murdered. What a lesson to be taught. A universal lesson that we have killed the Christ. Some were delighted, some were saddened. And he wasn't killed at all. Because his name was Christ. Appearing as Jesus. And to the few who understood, they were the ones who spread the word, who took the truth at any cost to themselves and lived it, taught it in their communities. Christ lives in you. You thought you buried him there. Little did you know. But he is still in you. And you and you. The Christ is in each of us. One Christ. One immense, infinite Christ. In each of us. So suddenly, wisdom comes to us to a degree. We get an idea that you don't mean that I'm the Christ. Mm-hmm. We do mean that. But I don't act it. Well, act it then. As long as you live, you will have to learn how to act and do what the Christ is. You can't go on doing what the Christ isn't, because that's not who you are. You can't do what you're not and who you're not. There's one Christ in you, in him, in her, and you and he and her have to enact the qualities of the Christ. You can't beat that plan. It's unbeatable. It's invincible. It's not human wisdom. It's something beyond us. Two men are running for governor. They're each the same individual. The outer forms, they're different. Now, when the Christ says, love your brethren, he's saying, love the reality of your brethren. Don't love the outer forms. Love the reality. So you see, the teaching is all underground, you might say. That's why people are so confused. It hasn't been brought out to them. Some say it's too difficult to bring out, and others say, well, it's not too difficult if you try. Somehow you'll find a way to do it. And in the long run, they'll be grateful, and in the longer run, you have no choice, because as long as you know the truth, you've got to speak the truth. And you've got to know that the Christ, which has been buried in the tomb so long, is in each one's being as the self, and the Christ will be ever so grateful when you come forth and bring the awareness of that Christ to the form that allegedly is walking the earth. That's our mission, and it's such a beautiful mission. It's everything we can do to fulfill it is really a life work, because each of us has that mission, first to his neighbors or himself or everyone he possibly can open their eyes and get them to see that this that you're looking at, this flesh, I know it's either ugly or it's pretty or it's handsome or something, but that's not them, it's not me. Learn to accept what is there. Love your brethren means accept the reality that is there. That's what love is. Not just loving the form and all that stuff. It's learn to accept the perfect reality that underlies the form. That's why this is called mysticism. That's why it's a perfect message. It brings us to where we must go to be ourselves. In our attempt to love the other fellow, as we strive to find his reality and to accept his reality, we find our own. And the other fellow finds our reality and loves us. So we're all doing each other a great favor as we learn to lift each other up to the point of observation of the truth. Until someone looks at you and says, you must be the Christ. I've wondered why I felt all this power and strength and honesty and just something very divine about you. And now I realize it. You act, and you're acting out the Christ without trying to act. You're being what God made you. The inner and the outer are one. And we've all got an inner and an outer that are two. Your inner is nothing like your outer. Gradually, you reverse that. That's how you're going to the fifth dimension, the fifth world. There's no God watching, looking at you and saying, now, how many demerits does he have? And how many, you know, nothing like that. But it's automatic. When you reach a certain point of acceptance, of manifestation, of doing what you think you want to do, and finally getting to free yourself from the opinions that sort of clutter up and fog us over and confuse us, and you get free and free and free, you finally are able to act and see to some degree what is there. You're accepting the invisible without knowing, having the vision of it, but you're bringing your awareness to the point of what you believe it is. And if you believe it is wonderful and good and pure, that will be your consciousness. And then you're not saying, I want to go to the fifth level and tell me when I'm there. But when you attain certain facets, all of a sudden you find that something is happening. The scoreboard is automatic, you know. I find that something happens to me and I feel different. I feel I can walk through some things that you can't walk through as a human being. Situations and things of that nature. When suddenly you need something and you're thinking hard, it doesn't come. And then there it is and you haven't even thought about it. It's beginning to percolate, you see. When these things happen to you, and you know them, they happen to all of us, so certain things are such clarity and speed, and we penetrate things that we would take years to penetrate in our understanding. And that's as we clean up our act, and I'm not a human being, and I'm not going to clutter up my life with our human thoughts. You begin to purify yourself. You look at your friend and you see her as she probably is, not as she appears to be. And so suddenly she says to you, know, I'm feeling different. I just feel different. And you say, I knew that something was happening in me to see you differently. And that's how it's happening. That's how we are all loving our neighbors, to get this level of consciousness to that level which is going to be, in physical sense or in knowledge, the fifth level. You won't know who you are. It says you're going to be a little tiny child again, because this level is so new that we start out all over again. But everything changes. Different vision, different hearing, different sense of touch, different senses, a different mind. It's not this one. The Christ mind is entirely different. Everything we are going to do in it is going to be divinely directed. The little child will know more than the greatest philosopher. The little fifth division child, not any old little child, the one born into the next level. And I feel that 4/5 of our class is going, and the other fifth we're working on, because we all ought to know enough in this definite study about truth that we all see what we're doing. And it's no guesswork anymore. We know that as we obey the principles we're taught, if we learn to see God in everybody, if we learn that he's not the flesh, she's not the flesh, I'm not the flesh, so something happens. And the things that have happened to you over the last 5, 10, 15, 20 years, you know what happens, how it happens. It's gradual. But it's there. The changes are so marked, so positive, so beyond human understanding that we don't know how it happens, but it happens. You can see a man really change, not before your eyes in a second, but gradually. That man was once, well, he was once what people would have said was unwanted around. Just wasn't the kind of person you wanted around. You didn't know what he would do next. And then you look at him after he has tried and worked at study. You can't find anything in him you don't like. He is changed. And it's a good feeling to feel changed. Because then you know that I've made it with God. I really have made it with God, because I can tell by the little things that come my way that I'm doing good in the God universe. And I'm glad that I held back on this, and I'm glad that I went ahead on that. Something is paying off. I'm finding that the Spirit of God is acknowledging me. So then we want to look at ourselves, and we are now the person we're examining. When we see something wrong in an individual, we are looking at what we have seen to be there. We are not looking at what God put there. The only thing that God put there is the Christ. The only thing we can see that's true is the Christ. All the rest has been put there by the thought of the individual, by our thought, and by world thought. All three. But God placed perfection there. You have to abide in the perfection that God placed there, and say that what God has made is the only reality. Can you do it? Before you say yes or no, I'll tell you that if you cannot do it, that is your death. That's all death is for, a person who cannot live out the fullness of the Christ, has to come back and try again. If you can do it again, try again. Always again, again, again. We must live out the Christ. That's as simply as it can be put. And you swallow your this, and you swallow your that, but you live out the Christ because you want to face another day in the Spirit of God. That's the only reason you keep trying and trying and trying. You've got to be the Christ yourself and see the Christ that is there and not the illusions around the Christ. It becomes that simple to see, to understand, and I know it's anything but simple to do. I feel like everyone else. But we fail less and less. 50 years ago was a great, great big failure. It devaluates as we go. It becomes a little less and less. Finally now we don't have much of a failure left. Just some things that we still cling to as I see that and I see this. Things I don't understand that I'm looking at. All that. I guess we will take the break. I think I heard somebody left, and they probably wanted to do that. So we'll take the break, and I'll come back in 10 minutes.